Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Public Safety Commission. I'll start with the roll call. Commissioner Blair.
Here.
Commissioner Stodgill.
Here.
Commissioner Wainwright.
Here.
I'm Chairman Mock. Quorum of the Public Safety Commission is present, and the public meeting of the commission is called to order and will now proceed. The time is 10:02 in the morning, and the location of this meeting is the Criminal Law Enforcement Auditorium at 6100 Guadalupe, as posted in the agenda. We will now consider the agenda items that have been posted for this meeting. We'll begin with an invocation by Chaplain Furman Carpenter. Please rise.
Our Holy Father, we are so grateful for you and for your love for us, for our country that we are blessed to live in, Father, for our great state of Texas. Father, we thank you that we've started a brand-new Public Safety Commission for 2023, Father. We thank you so much for each of our commissioners, for getting them here safely, Father, for the great blessing that they are to us, their wisdom, their insight, Father. Please be with them during this meeting. Father, special blessing, we ask that you please be with our Commissioner Blair. We're sorry for the loss of her husband, the good man Jim, Father, that he was, Father, and we know she'll miss him. Please continue to be with her and her family. Father, thank you for the Department of Public Safety, for every man and woman in the Department of Public Safety, Father. Please bless them with integrity, Father, and to keep the integrity of the department safe, Father, and protect our law enforcement officers, Father. Please be with each one of them, Father, and bring them home safely at night, Father, and help them during the day. Special thanks, Father, that Trooper Curtis Putz, Father, continues to improve. We're thankful that his improvement looks great, Father, and we ask you continue to be with him. Father, thank you for the agenda items been set before our commissioners and department today, Father, and help them to be settled in a way that helps our great state and helps our citizens stay safe. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. We'll now have the pledges by Corporal Valerie Verduzco.
Of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Please be seated. Our next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the Public Safety Commission meeting held on December 15th, 2022. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I so move.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to approve the minutes of the Public Safety Commission meeting of December 15th, 2022. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The minutes are passed. Are there any commissioners wishing to give comment before we move into presentation?
I'd like to do that, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind. Thank you very much. I'm Nelda Blair, commissioner on this board, and I'm very pleased to be back. I want to mention that, as you heard, and many of you know, my husband passed away. Jim Blair passed away last month, and he's also my driver for the past 25 years. So those of you who know that we're lucky I'm here today, having driven myself. But I want to say two quick things. And one is I am reluctant that I had to miss a couple of events for this wonderful institution during the time period that I was caretaking for him, because I'm a no absence, play by the rules kind of girl. And I never intended to not be present for something that was important for this organization. So I apologize for that. But sometimes God puts things in your pathway that are you realize are much more important, and he was. So that was my role. The second thing I want to say is the outpouring of compassion and support and love from this organization, from the people of this organization at my husband's service was overwhelming. And I just want to say how much I appreciate everyone that was able to attend. The DPS presence was amazing. I can't tell you, I heard comment after comment after comment. And in fact, one of the comments was, well, so did the governor send all those people? And I said, no, those are my DPS peeps. They came on their own. And you know, it was the day before the legislature opened, and so just to have anyone there was kind of amazing because, you know, it was an odd time. But I, for those of you who couldn't come and for those who did, I just want to say how much I appreciate it, how much it has really supported me. And I also want to let you know that there's a lot of peace in my life right now because my husband made sure of that before he left. So I'm doing quite well. But with your support, I'll continue to do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nalda, for those very moving words. Please know that Jim is in our thoughts and prayers, as well as you and your family. We'll now move on to presentations. Director?
Yes, sir.
The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 30 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Teresa Diefenbach. Angela Kimbrough. Chad Pernicka. Thank you. The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 35 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Richard Fernandez. Bonnie Fisher. And also with 35 years of service, Vester Roney.
Thank you.
2015, Sergeant Scott Hewitt has been a member of the state crash reconstruction team. Additionally, he is responsible for reviewing all department fleet crashes and is a core instructor of the Transportation Code. As a Highway Patrol trooper, he identified the need for uniformed enforcement of the Texas Transportation Code and proper application of contributing factors by law enforcement in crash investigations throughout the state. The volume and scope of these topics can make it difficult for officers to understand and accurately apply to real-world scenarios. Sergeant Hewitt's vision was to ensure every effort was made to create a system of uniformity, allowing all officers to better serve the citizens of this state. Undertaking the monumental task to create and develop a user-friendly resource to assist with uniform interpretation and application of the Transportation Code, Hewitt created a 278-page document titled Field Enforcement Guidance, which contains a listing of commonly utilized Transportation Code arrest titles. In addition, he went on to create an additional 130-page document titled Contributing Factors in Crash Investigation Guidance to assist officers with the uniform application and use of contributing factors in crash reporting and directly correlated each of these back to the Transportation Code guide. This guide addresses every possible contributing factor which could be present in a crash, along with examples, diagrams, and explanations of their use or their non-applicability under certain conditions. Sergeant Hewitt is also responsible for authoring a corresponding 8-hour TCOL accredited course of instruction, which has been presented to thousands of Texas law enforcement officers through Highway Patrol in-service, first-line supervisor training, crash special topics courses, and to numerous other Texas police agencies. The tireless, forward-thinking, and dedicated efforts of Sergeant Scott Hewitt are in keeping with the finest traditions of the department, and he is hereby awarded the Medal of Merit. Also, we have Jackie Chavez here today to make a presentation to Sergeant Hewitt on behalf of the DPS Foundation. On December 14th, 2022, while attending a DPS fitness unit workout in a state parking garage, a state employee suffered a medical emergency. After becoming aware of the emergency, Sergeant Roy Lytle approached and assessed the subject, determined he was having a seizure, and rolled him onto his side. Another class participant cried out for help, which resulted in the response of troopers Joshua De La Garza and Antonio RICO responding. As they arrived, the subject stopped breathing and no longer had a pulse. Sergeant Lytle rolled the subject onto his back and secured AED pads in order to analyze the subject's heart function. The AED recommended a shock be administered, and after this was completed by Sergeant Lytle, Trooper RICO began CPR compressions while Trooper De La Garza coordinated with EMS and prepared his DPS unit to transport the patient if necessary. Trooper RICO continued chest compressions until the subject began breathing on his own and a faint pulse was detected. Trooper De La Garza directed EMS personnel to the location, and upon their arrival, personnel took charge of medical treatment and transported the patient to the hospital where he was monitored and analyzed for the cause of the medical incident. In recognition of their decisive and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Sergeant Roy Lytle and Troopers Joshua De La Garza and Antonio RICO are hereby awarded the life-saving award.
Our presentations for today. As I always say, these meetings, this is true. Thank you.
Watching DiMaggio on the 56th Canyon Street, and it was amazing. That was like life affirming. Like, I don't know. It was.
I'm telling you, you have to listen because people that are coming to the yeah, whatever, then they hear it and they're like, who is that?
Thank you.
The Public Safety Commission has returned from a break. The time is 10:37 in the morning. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is item six, public comment. Sophie, do we have any public comment? Is there anyone in the room wishing to give public comment today? Hearing none, public comment is closed. Before we move on to the director's report, I want to recognize members of different offices from the legislature who are here in person or online today. In person, we have Matt Ruschuk from Chairman Guillen's office and Suzanne Tomlin from Lieutenant Governor Patrick's office. Online, we have Brandy Perez from Representative Tenderholt's office and Hayden Cottrell from Representative Mary Gonzalez's office. If I missed anybody, I'm sorry, but we appreciate y'all attending the meeting today, so thank you. Turn it over to Director McCraw for the director's report, item seven on the agenda. Director McCraw.
Chairman, Commissioners, the director's brief today is really about Operation Lone Star, but more specifically in terms of air operations and how important it is to Operation Lone Star. And you've got a vast, international border with Mexico, 1,254 miles. It's important. There's no way that you can handle it always without having a state-of-the-art capability. And we're blessed that the legislature over the years has invested in air assets, and we're able to support, our people on the ground, Border Patrol agents on the ground, but local law enforcement on the ground. And so today's presentation is going to focus on a case brief from Air Operations Division. So I'm going to turn it over. I think you'll recognize a chief of air operations and his trusty deputy, Stacy.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Tim Oxner, Chief Pilot, and this is my Assistant Chief, Stacy Holland. And Stacy's put together a presentation for you today.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to start with I chose the Big Bend sector to kind of tag on to what the director stated, that the aircraft is successful in all the sectors on Operation Lone Star, no doubt. But in this particular sector, the area is so big and it is so challenging and it's so unforgiving that, quite frankly, some of the locations that we're making a rest in, there's no other way to get there but by helicopter. So with that, I would like to start with a little quick video to kind of give you some illustrations of what I'm talking about.
Texas is using every tool and strategy that we can for the state to do the federal government's job to secure the border.
That's a little bit of an illustration, and I want to show you a couple of pictures of some seizures. And certainly in terms of Operation Lone Star, we all know that there's the data proves that there's so many apprehensions and bodies, you know, in some months we're north of 250,000. But what sometimes is lost is all the dope seizures that we're making as part of Operation Lone Star. So that's what I kind of want to focus on today is crimes against the state. As you can see in these photos, the narcotic seizures have been overwhelming during the last 2 years of Operation Lone Star. And you can also see how desolate and remote and how unforgiving this terrain is. And you know, this presentation today is really about this concept that we've come up with, where we're combining, you know, the ancient form of ground sign tracking and following people through footprints and stuff that they leave, but also combining with the mobility and the high-tech helicopter. It's kind of a unique success model combining these two forms, if you will. And I think you'll see that over the last couple of years, certainly it's yielded a lot of results when it comes to protecting the border, specifically in Big Bend. Here's another one. Now, this one's kind of unique. This is about a 10-second video, and I wanted to be able to show you what actual cartel, specifically La Línea cartel smugglers look like that have entered into, the state of Texas and into the across the boundary. And, you know, obviously you can see the terrain, and Sophie will play this video. I want you to see how difficult and challenging it is. But these are actually the smugglers. And oftentimes you'll ask yourself, well, why are you walking them out? Because there's no other way to get them to a collection point. As you can see in this rocky terrain, we're not even trying to get them to a public highway. We're just trying to get them to a dirt road where we can refer them to CID or refer them to the United States Border Patrol. And so it's just an illustration of how deep into the mountains that we're actually finding these people. Next one, please.
¿Qué país?
De Bachonchi, de Calamara, Guatemala.
¿Y cuántos días caminando?
Como 6 días, 5.
He's basically saying he's been carrying that bundle for 5 days since he crossed the Rio Grande River boundary. Next slide. Here's another illustration of what we're seeing out there, you know, 15, 18,000 pounds at a time. Our crew actually were able to track this load down. Luckily for us, it had rained a couple days prior, and so it left some pretty prolific tracks. And you know, it's just an example of the tonnage and the size and scope of the seizures that we're making as part of Operation Lone Star. This is something unique I wanted to put in. We all know that our troopers and agents, port of entry officers are seizing fentanyl, you know, at alarming numbers. Certainly we're all aware of that and how deadly and dangerous it is. I wanted to put this in here because it, you know, we all expect our troopers and, you know, to have Narcan and be prepared. We rarely thought of a pilot or an air crew that would be exposed to fentanyl, you know, but given that we're so proactive and actually on the ground a lot out here, our air crews are now carrying fentanyl and taking the appropriate safety protocols to deal with it. And this is here December 17th. Now, this isn't just a fentanyl case. It was a case where what we call poly-loaded bundles, those bundles of marijuana, they're actually poly-loaded. And this is something we're seeing more and more where perhaps the cartel is, in times past, is thinking that we'll just assume, take a sample of the dope or the marijuana, weigh it out, put it in a crime lab, and not actually cut it open, and we're finding, you know, methamphetamine, some scheduled type drugs inside these bundles. And that's kind of new, at least in for me. But here again, 2.05 pounds, according to DPS crime lab, that's 464,000 legal doses. But again, seized on a private ranch in the middle of absolutely nowhere with another load of narcotics. We're also seeing this more and more where the smugglers themselves are carrying a lot of personal use methamphetamine to try to get them through this 5 or 7 day track, you know, without food and water. So now that we're searching them, it seems like we're finding, like, you know, several ounces of or grams of meth to kind of fuel them, if you will, to the pickup spot. Next slide. This commission board may remember last year, last February, part of our footprint in Alpine and our crew, we had an outstanding individual who had done a lot as, with Operation Lone Star and really developed a trade craft, if you will, on tracking these people down on foot, I may add. And the commission and agency awarded him with the William P. Clements Excellence Award. And what you may not know is that sometime after that award, he was recognized nationally with the help of Lieutenant Chris Olivares and Travis Considine with our PIO office, who are here today. Jimmy was submitted for a Patriot Award in Florida. And this is a national award. It's, you know, picked over thousands of officers for heroism. And you ask why the heroism? Well, because he's sometimes taking on these smugglers by himself, even though he's got air cover. You know, we try to give him a partner. So I think it takes a lot for him to shoulder, you know, some of these interdictions himself. And so he was chosen and selected. And if you don't mind, I'd like to show you a little video that justifies why he got it better than what Tim and I could tell you.
Here's what you see every day. Lines of people trying to cross the border and the Rio Grande River. Then there's the ones who don't want to get caught. It's the most remote and unforgiving terrain along the southern border. In the sweltering Texas heat, there are places no one should go.
I'm gonna get her.
That's where you'll find Sergeant Morris.
I can't possibly begin to summarize all of the cases Jimmy has made, both on narcotic seizures and capturing those who've entered our country illegally.
One of our primary DPS trackers, who has made over thousands of apprehensions and also seized thousands of pounds of drugs.
One of our biggest proponents is Sergeant Morris.
Jimmy has developed a unique skill set, ground tracking, and being able to pick up foot signs from, you know, human smugglers and from immigrants that have entered into the country illegally.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
There's a lot of folks around the whole nation that doesn't know how many people try to come across through this desolate area.
Yeah, we got them running here. We got about 29 runners.
I start off 99% of the time I'm in the air.
Yeah.
Start looking for foot sign from the air and the ground. That's when I'll determine, like, all right, hey, this is good stuff right here.
Yeah, I'm gonna land right up here.
Got bodies.
These more than likely from Mexico. He's smuggling narcotics.
Another three dopers going to jail for a little while, huh?
My pilot out here, he could land 10 to 50 times in a day to pick me up and drop me off. I could walk anywhere from a couple hundred yards to 19.3 miles is the furthest I've walked.
If Sergeant Morris was not there, then these groups would just get by. A lot of these drugs would hit the streets.
I have definitely taken things for granted now recently. It seems to be more dangerous. We know that he's in danger when he goes out there.
This is all them. They're all up here.
It takes advanced training in order to do that. And there's probably nobody like Sergeant Morris that actually gets out there on a daily basis and uses that training to where he has become an expert.
If he's on the trail, I'm not blowing smoke, but if it's there, he's going to find it.
He keeps going out there every day because he cares. He cares about the security of this border. He cares about his country. He cares about his state.
So that's a tee up for what's coming next. And this is actually a little small clip of then Sergeant Morris receiving his award in Florida.
Married for 25 years to his high school girlfriend, father of five, the man you are proud to share a country with, the recipient of this year's Heroism Award, Sergeant James Morris of the state of Texas.
And Jimmy and his wife, Linda, are in attendance today, and I'd like to take an opportunity for him to stand up and publicly acknowledge and congratulate Jimmy for receiving this award. Commissioner, Mr. Chairman, I have one more slide. And so we all know about Jimmy going to Florida and being recognized by this commission and the Patriot Award Acts. But during the ceremony, there was something that only a couple of us knew about, and it was long overdue. And Chief Ochsner, myself, and a couple others had a surprise. Jimmy didn't know about this. And you'll kind of wonder why I say then Sergeant Morris, and now I want to show you. He did not know this was going to happen.
In grateful recognition of your outstanding performance, productivity, and dedicated service, I'm promoting you to the rank of Staff Lieutenant.
I want to close with this. Jimmy's been recognized as an individual. He's very humble. He's a team player. But the guys in Alpine that are the duty pilots, I mean, Jimmy had to get to where he was going somewhere, right? And what I don't want to be lost is the pilots that got him there. They're a crew concept, and these pilots are making unbelievable off-airport landings in very brutal and unforgiving terrain with high and hot conditions, oftentimes zero illumination nights, and they've done it during Operation Lone Star with pretty much outputting a scratch on one of our helicopters, so I don't want that to be lost, and I'll take any questions.
And sort of Alpine rescues, too, right?
Many, yes, sir, both living in recoveries, yes, sir. Yes.
I just want to congratulate Lieutenant Morris for everything. I know there are many people in the department who do a great job every day. This is an extraordinary work, and we really are proud of the work he's doing. And to your point about the aircraft team, as having been on the commission for a number of years and watching our aircraft division grow, I've come to really appreciate and thank the legislature for their investments in our aircraft program over the years. I can't imagine where we would be with Operation Lone Star today had they not done that for many years, because it's not something you just turn on overnight. You don't just say, oh, we're going to have an aircraft division. So it's I just want to thank the legislature for those investments over the years and stress the importance of our aircraft division to the success of Operation Lone Star. Would not be possible without that.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioners.
Yeah, I want to make a couple of comments to follow up on Commissioner Mock. First of all, I think that our aircraft program and the folks who work in it from DPS are doing an exceptional job, and kudos to you guys. I definitely want to thank the state legislature for giving us the resources that we need. I was in Terlingua in December, right on the border, and it's so vast. It's kind of hard to comprehend how vast Big Bend is down there, and I don't see how you could possibly begin to enforce any kind of border security without using aircraft as you guys are presently doing. It seems like it's the only way that you could cover that amount of territory. It's like a needle in a haystack, really, down there. Needle in a gigantic haystack. So great job. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
And I just want to say, you know, the smaller picture, even though it's a big picture too, is the seeing that award on a nationwide show. And also watching, you know, the video that shows the teamwork. But let's not forget, and I want every one of you that's in there to remember this too, what people see is this entire department and the state of Texas when they see that. Because I guarantee you they're Googling now possibly the border or your name or DPS in general, and they have more respect, and so you're representing that. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I was down on the border around Eagle Pass the week after Christmas with Colonel McCraw and just saw a little bit of what the men and women with DPS, with Border Patrol and others are doing to protect Texas and protect the entire country from incursions from not just Central and South America, but from around the world. And Lieutenant Morris, your dedication, your courage, your service is incredible, and it's emblematic of what we see throughout DPS. Thanks for being that example, and thanks for the air crew and all that you do as well. Again, thank you, Governor and Legislature, for supporting DPS in doing the important work that we're doing through Operation Lone Star.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Lynn, you and the commissioner said it better than I can, so I'm close.
All right. We'll move on to item 8 on the agenda, new business. Let me put my readers on. Item A is final determination, contested cases, consideration and possible action on proposals for decision, items 1 and 2. I'll turn those over to Phil Adkins.
There are two contested cases on today's agenda. Case summary and a proposal for decision are for each case are in your meeting materials. The first case is from the private security program, in which the department denied Ariel K. Allen's application for a non-commissioned security officer license based on two disqualifying felony convictions. The applicant contested the department's denial. The assigned administrative law judge upheld the department's denial. The second case is from the vehicle inspection program. The department is seeking to suspend Ernesto Bastard's vehicle inspection license for a period of 12 months. A covert audit revealed that the licensee failed to inspect required items. The assigned administrative law judge agreed that the evidence presented established the failure to inspect and affirmed a 12-month suspension. I request that the commission adopt as its final determination the proposal for decisions issued by the assigned administrative law judges in the two contested cases on today's docket.
And I second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Wainwright to approve items 8A, 1 and 2, SOA docket number 405-22-07255.psp in the case of Ariel Allen, and SOA docket 405-22-07451.mbi in the case of Ernesto Bastard. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Item B on under new business, report, discussion, possible action on the following rule proposal for publication to receive public comment, proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 27.1 concerning right of review. Chief Michelle Ferris will give that.
Good morning. Michelle Ferris, Chief of the Crime Records Division. And the division is proposing changes to Administrative Rule 27.1, Right of Review. The proposed changes include updating current procedures to include additional biometric submissions to expand technology to advance beyond fingerprint capture and to include additional modalities in the future. It removes specific contact information, such as FBI phone number, and also refers to a website for us to keep the website updated as opposed to continuously having to come back to modify rules. It further clarifies and defines the fees and that structure and what's being outlined and how that fee is structured, updates to website addresses, and probably most importantly, it removes the Denson lobby as a location for fingerprint capture, again, pointing to the vendor's website so the individual can go and schedule an appointment at a location that better suits their specific location. And then it provides additional clarification on how an individual can receive a response, what those responses will look like, and then any kind of restrictions in terms of how long those results are valid for. And with that, that's the changes we would like to make, and we're requesting approval to post this to the Texas Register for public comment.
Commissioners, any questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
I so move, Chairman.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to post a rule proposal for publication to receive public comment on proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 27.1 concerning right of review. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. He's been practicing his motions while I was gone, wouldn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Focusing last time on the, they had to do it all.
It was, we're focusing on the promptness of making the motion for
I was
obvious
watching.
Reasons.
Okay. Item C under new business, intelligence threat briefing. We'll discuss that in executive session. Moving on to item 9 on the agenda, ongoing business discussion, possible action regarding the compassionate use program. Chief Wayne Muller and Deputy Director Jeff Williams. Gentlemen.
want to give you a brief update on some of the topics that we've discussed in recent commission meetings regarding the compassionate use program.
Thank you, ma'am. As I stated at the last commission meeting, our intent to open up the window for applications for potential new licensees into the program. We opened that window on January 16th, and it's our intent to keep that open until April 31st, so essentially a 100-day period for those that want to indicate their interest in becoming part of the program. Thus far, we have received 57 applications that are in various stages of what is essentially a three-step application process. At this point, we've been watching to see of the 36 applicants that applied the first time back in 2016, so far we have not received any renewal or updated applications from any of those groups. We'll continue to monitor that, but so far we haven't seen any of those re-upping from last time. So 57 thus far, and we will see what we get through the end of April. As this is a public meeting and open forum, I do want to reiterate what we have discussed before, Chairman. Our intent is to take a measured approach to this, to be conservative in looking at assessing what the patient population growth looks like, coupled with recommendations from our consultant, coupled with input from the working group we've established, so that we can try and set forth the right number of licensees for now, as well as a reasonable horizon. My point to all that is, once we get to July, August of this year and are looking at potentially adding licensees, somebody that's interested come back in for that 10th position. We've already had some inquiries along those lines. It was largely, we had that meeting back on January 25th here on campus. It was largely an introductory meeting so that they could familiarize themselves with who we are and what we do, not only RSD, but the department as a whole, and also familiarize them with the legislative process so they can have some understanding as the type of decisions that we can make as we regulate the program on a daily basis, as opposed to those things that have to be a statutory change, you know, such as the THC cap that we cannot do ourselves, and they need to have those discussions with the legislature. All in all, I thought it was a very good meeting. I think the individuals that we asked to come in and share their input are going to take it very seriously. They understand their role is not to just give their own perspectives on the program, but also be a liaison between us as regulator and the population of the state that works in this area and is involved in this area, so they can elicit more information and push that input to us. We set up communication links with them. It is an informal working group, so there's not a quorum requirement. Communications can happen continuously, not just in a meeting setup. We did have that initial meeting to kind of, again, be introductory and let people meet one another. Right now, we're kind of in that phase where the next 60 days will let us know what the legislature is going to do or not as far as the program is concerned. And then we will plan on probably having another meeting with them thereafter to see what their thoughts are on the way legislation is heading. And then lastly, Chairman, I did mention again that we are intending to stand up a consultant, contract with a consultant that has some experience with some of the other programs across the country that are maybe a bit more mature because they've been there longer and try and gain some lessons learned. The solicitation process closed yesterday afternoon. That is because we extended it twice. Frankly, we did not get a whole lot of participation during the first window, and so we worked with our teammates in procurement to extend it. We do now have a handful of bidders to that solicitation, and so now our team in RSD, along with our teammates in procurement, will begin the evaluation process, and hopefully we'll get that solicitation, that contract in place, and start gaining some information and some recommendations from that consultant. So that's where we are as far as what we've been working on with the compassionate use program. There's no action item that I'm requesting from you today on this topic, but I'd be happy to try and answer any questions that you might have.
Before we go to questions, Director Williams, do you have any items to add to that?
Other than to say I'm very happy with the progress. I mentioned obviously the interest is significant. I think the working group and the consultant together are going to be able to help out with providing the department their thoughts on how we best regulate the program. We want to be transparent in how we do that. You know, full disclosure, we only see it through our eyes, and so it's very helpful to have those others participate in the process so that we understand what it is that they're encountering and how they view the problem and how they view the industry and so on. And so I think it's a good move that, you know, we're headed that direction. We're going where we want to be. We're not there yet, but I think so far I'm very happy with it. 57 was a little shocking, frankly, so there's obviously an interest, and we'll evaluate that once we're all done.
And to confirm that, you said 36 of the original applicants for the first round way back when have not come, none of those have come back to the table. All 57 of these applications are new applicants?
Yes, Chairman, thus far that is correct. There was 39, as I understand, last time. Three were selected, and our current licensees, the remaining 36, thus far, those groups have not put in a new application.
It could be the same people behind a different entity, perhaps.
That is possible. They could have reformulated in some other, you know, LLC or corporate entity or whatnot. So there is that possibility that it is just a new reconfiguration. But thus far as the group that applied last time compared to now, again, we have till April 31st, but so far, none of those old groups have put in.
Thank you.
A couple of questions, Chief Mueller. Just to clarify, the 36 that applied before, that at least not in the same name or under the same entity, have reapplied. Are those 36 applications not considered at this point in time, or do they need updating, or do they have to submit an entirely new application to be considered?
Those 36 would not put in an application fee this time, so we would recognize that old application from that standpoint, but we did require that they proactively re-up their application, give us renewal information to make sure that we understand specifically that they are still interested since it's been a significant period of time. So that's what we're looking for, is for them to at least proactively indicate to us that they are still interested.
Okay. And you've explained that DPS is, I think, prudently waiting to solidify a number of factors involved here till we see what the legislature is going to do and what their authorization is and is not. Do you have a sense of the types of bills that are being considered now? Are any key themes or big issues that bubbling around in the legislature? Of course, we know none of it's legislation until it's passed and signed by the governor. But any big themes coming to light so far in the session?
I'm aware of at least one bill that is looking, not surprisingly, to raise the THC cap.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I'm sorry, yes. The one bill that would raise the THC cap right now, it can be no more than 1% THC by weight. There is at least one bill out there that would raise it, I believe, to 5%. And then there are some other bills as well that would be even more aggressive than that. That seems to be one of the main points of contention, if you will. Obviously, physicians that have a greater ability to adjust for patients what that THC level is gives them more flexibility within the program. So that is a constant sticking point of just how much THC can be involved with the final product. So that is one of the main ones that I have still seen that I have seen as far as bills are concerned thus far.
And one other question. The working group's great idea, keeping your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the industry and those that are stakeholders in the industry is great. And the consultant's a great idea. We need to get this right. And it's new and it's complicated. Are we looking at what other states have done and are doing to learn whether positive or negative from their experience, you know, states like Florida that have a substantially larger compassionate use program? Are we analyzing what they've done and their experience as well?
Yes, Commissioner, absolutely. So we are part of CANRA, which is the Cannabis Regulators Association, which is made up of just of state programs across the country. And RSD staff, several RSD staff are involved with those conversations constantly. I've had conversation with a couple of the directors of other programs across the country, and it is very valuable information. Again, we don't want to try and reinvent any wheels here that we don't have to. There's plenty of lessons learned for us of other states, in particular ones that feel like they move too fast. And because they move too fast, there's not the infrastructure ready to make sure that the program is successful overall. I fully appreciate that the end user patients and patients, parents of patients want to have a robust infrastructure where, similar to going to the grocery store, you can choose HEB, Randall's, or Kroger, and you have all the products there at the lowest price. And that's what we want to potentially have this program evolve to at some point in time. but this program is not quite there yet. It's going from infancy to toddler, as I see it at this point in time. And so thus my repeated statement of us taking a measured approach to it, so that we don't go too far too fast. And to that end, our conversations with other state programs has been a great resource, absolutely.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Chief Mueller. Keep up the good work, you and your department.
Any other questions? All right, thank you, Chief. Item B under ongoing business is report discussion and possible action. I'm sorry, possible adoption of the following previously published rule, proposed amendments to 37 TSC section 16.1 concerning general requirements. And Chief Sherry Gibson from Driver's License will give that report.
Good morning. Sherry Gibson, Chief Driver License Division. We posted TAC Section 16.1 amendments in the Texas Register, and these amendments are concerning the hazardous material endorsement exemption. We amended the date that's referenced based on the federal regulations and added an additional reference to 49 CFR 383.3I. We did not receive any comments, and we are recommending adoption for item 9B1.
Commissioners, any questions? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll move that we approve the proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 16.1.
I'll second the motion, Chairman.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Wainwright to adopt the proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 16.1 concerning general requirements as outlined in the agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. Item C on ongoing business report, discussion, possible action regarding the modification of the DPS organizational structure and the appointment, promotion, ratification, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a member of the department or commission management team. Director McCraw, do you have anything for us?
Yes, I do. As you know, as an agency, we've got outstanding people in all positions matter, but in December, we had two retirements. One, Valerie Brown, a former chief of human resources, and God bless her. And we're fortunate to have had her as one of our leaders. And Mineral Bowie, a chief of training operations division, who did a tremendous job for the Department of Public Safety throughout his career. So we're saying goodbye to them. And now it's we need to replace that. And these are key positions. And we recognize that you're part of your overarching guidance in terms of for the department is always to seek continuous improvement in operations and our programs. And to that end, we do have some recommendations as to the structure, but also as to people in this regard. First, our recommendation to you, replace the chief of Training Operations Division. We recommend to you that Assistant Chief Walt Goodson be promoted to the position of Chief of Training Operations Division. And, of course, I can save it to the end if you'd like, Chairman, as opposed to individual voting. But
how do you prefer to vote on that one?
Okay, I'll make a motion, Chairman.
A second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to approve the appointment of Walt Goodson as Chief of the Training Operations Division. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Chief, congratulations.
I don't know what he's done.
Before we move on, I do want to thank Renewal Bowie for his service in that role.
Absolutely. A tremendous asset to the Department of Public Safety. Of course, we're wondering what the new chief has done for us in the area of recruiting, but I think he can take that up for you at the next commission meeting. We'll give him a couple days before he gets squared away. Secondly, certainly human resources are vitally important to every agency. We recognize that. And we're doing something a little bit different in terms of recommendations to the point in terms of achieving efficiencies. What we'd like to do is to move human resources under Infrastructure and Operations Division, create a single division, and essentially was the administrative division of the Department of Public Safety long ago. But right now, it's matured to the level in terms of things that it's handled, in terms of procurement, things that processes put in place. We believe that a chief can oversee both both areas of operations in terms of infrastructure, facilities, logistics, but also the administrative part, importantly, the human resource part. With the exception, our recommendation is that a portion of that, okay, specifically right now, the Equal Employment Office, which you know is vitally important to the department, we take very seriously the program, but also allegations of violations and misconduct, and to the point where those are investigated by the Inspector General who reports to you. And our recommendation, we move to the Equal Employment Office, which is comprised of Nathaniel Haddock, and move it over to the Office of Inspector General under him, and is, you know, through him, a direct report to the Public Safety Commission. We'd further recommend that, you know, Kevin Mead remain with the Infrastructure Operations Division. He's in the Dispute Resolution Office. And with that, those are that concludes the recommendations to the commission. Any that I missed?
Gentlemen?
Well, one of the important parts of this is that we're not saying human resources is not important. It absolutely is. But we have great confidence in Katie Conley, the assistant chief, the current assistant chief of human resources. She'll be moving over and work for under the Infrastructure Operations Division. The new division would be called Human Resource Operations Division. The new one will be called the Infrastructure Operations Division's Human Resource Operations Division. So I'm not sure what that acronym is. I'll work on that, Chairman. I'm hoping it comes out something that's not obscene. Okay. But nevertheless, those are the recommendations.
Okay, and to clarify, who's your recommendation for the assistant chief for human resources?
The assistant chief will be in effect. It's Katie Conley. She is the assistant chief right now.
Okay.
So we're not. What we're doing is eliminating a chief position. Is what we're doing by combining them. So the assistant chief, and she'll continue to oversee HR operations with the exclusion of EEO, which will be moved to the Office of Inspector General.
And that will be directly under the IG?
Yes, recommendation. Yes, sir.
So I have a question for you. Do we have, this is for Phil Adkins, do we have any, does the commission need to approve the organizational change?
Traditionally, the commission has approved organizational changes, so I recommend that you do so.
Particularly one coming under us, I would say.
So there are two actions here. There's an organizational structure change, and
yes,
then
sir.
There are appointments to the new positions.
Yes, sir.
Or appointment.
Well, actually one appointment that you've made today, and you're basically moving HR with the assistant chief, Katie Conley, mm-hmm. underneath the Infrastructure Operations and Human Resources Division.
So actually we're moving all of HR personnel. So
exactly.
Not a separate motion or separate act.
And importantly, the EEO moving out from under HR into right. the Office of Inspector General, which is a direct report to you.
Right.
Okay. I think we need to talk, we need to discuss the operational changes first and then go on to the I'm a little confused. I'm not confused, but I'm trying to get this in the right order. So I think we
okay.
need to do the operational
Start
changes
with
first.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd entertain.
I'll make a motion and then I'll let you tell me what it is.
Okay. Whoever seconds it has to say what the motion is.
Well, it seems that the structural change is first, and then the persons to run the new or amended structure then is second.
Yes,
it seems.
Yeah. We have a motion to change the structure as recommended by Director McCraw. Is there a second?
I second.
We have a motion and a second to move human resources into infrastructure operations and human resources, a new title for that division.
Yes, sir.
With the exception of the EEO office, which will now become part of the Inspector General's office, which will therefore then be directly reporting through the IG to the Public Safety Commission.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Is there any discussion on that point?
Yes. How many people are moving under the new, are moving into infrastructure and operations? In other words, what's the size of the HR staff? How big is that compared to the infrastructure and operations department? In other words, how big a chunk is infrastructure taking on?
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'd ask that Assistant Chief Katie Connolly come to the stand. 85. In HR. And Jessica, how many in, do we have in IOD?
We'll have about roughly 500 at any given time with the vacancy level with the combination.
Okay. And that does not include HR?
Well, that's with HR, number. Right?
With a, with HR. That include or not include the HR?
With HR.
With HR.
We'll hit about 500. So it's still relatively small in comparison to some of the other divisions.
Yep. And I assume Katie and the various folks involved, they're on board with this as well?
Well, I don't know, but I didn't ask.
I didn't ask permission.
We have met with Assistant Chief Katie Connolly, and she knows how valuable she is to the department, and recognizing that we need her core competency to continue to do what she's doing right now, just move a box over.
Okay. So I presume they will be on board shortly if they're not now.
And if I'm not mistaken, she's knowing Katie, she's probably already talked to her people and socialized that with you. Am I close, Chief? Yeah, so I knew she would.
And so our Inspector General will be in charge of EEO and those personnel if we approve the structural change.
If you approve it, yes, sir. Yeah, he's aware of, and presumably he'll do exactly what you want him to do.
I see a thumbs up from the Inspector General.
Inspector General. Yes, sir, I'm aware of it.
Okay, no more questions, Chairman, for me.
My recollection is that Commissioner Blair made the motion.
Correct.
And you seconded the motion?
Yep.
All right, yes, Wainwright seconded the motion, as I've already outlined. And is there any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Okay, then the second item is...
Okay, well, she's just moving over.
She's moving over, so we don't need
I think to... you're done.
Yeah.
I think we're good.
Yeah, I'd like to think
I thought
so.
You were going to take the EEO separate. Yes, no, I think we're good.
No, I think we're fine. Okay.
Okay, since she's not being promoted, we don't need to take that issue up regarding Ms. Connolly. Okay, makes sense.
Well, the director and I discussed all this yesterday, and it really makes a lot of sense. If you were to design the department from scratch today, you would have set it up this way to begin with, and it makes a lot of sense that we're streamlining our operations administratively. So I'm very pleased with these recommendations.
And it sounds like from an efficiency standpoint, we're also saving some dollars there. With eliminating
and thank
the chief position.
To yes, each person involved for your flexibility. Sometimes it's hard to do that when you've been doing something in one way for a while. So I hope that works out well for you. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We're going to move now on. Is that the rest of your report, Director, on item C?
That concludes my report. Okay. Yes, sir.
Item D under ongoing business report discussion of possible action regarding ongoing criminal investigations pursuant to Government Code Section 411.0041. We will handle that in executive session. Before we move on, I noticed we have Chris Olivares from the border who has become somewhat famous on television. We do appreciate your work, and we know it's not easy to do that, yeah. And really thank you for being the face of the department for Operation Lone Star in so many ways. There are obviously a lot of people involved in it, but you are the tip of the spear in terms of communicating with the public, and you do it quite well, so thank you very much.
And Chairman, for the record, I used to look like that 40 years ago. Okay.
Should we ask him if that's a compliment or
so
not?
So noted.
Well, that's a criticism of him.
Thank you. Moving on to item 10 under the agenda reports, are there any commission members wishing to give a report? Hearing none, we'll move on. Finance, any report? Chief Auditor's Office, any report? Any division reports? Okay, we'll move on to item 11 on the agenda, the consent items. Deputy Director Mathis, do you have anything to add?
No, sir. Not at this hour.
I'd entertain a motion to approve all items under Section 11 consent items.
I'll move. They're talking.
Commissioner Blair has moved, and Commissioner Stodgill has seconded the motion to approve all items under Section 11 of the agenda, the consent items. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. Commissioners, under item 12, please let Phil or Sophie know of any items for future agenda that you wish to include. Moving on to item 13 on the agenda, the date of our future meeting. The regular Public Safety Commission meeting is scheduled for April 20th, 2023. Discharge hearings will be scheduled for April 21, 2023. The Public Safety Commission will now go into closed session at this time pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, to consider matters authorized to be considered in executive session under Government Code Section 511.071072073074076 and Government Code Section 411.0041. The time is 11:31 a.m., I think. The Public Safety Commission has ended a closed session and is now reconvened as a quorum in open session. The time is 1:37 p.m. If there's no further business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair. Oh, is there any further discussion?
Commissioner Stodgill will have it. He doesn't have that many.
You were first. You need to up your game a little bit. is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. We are adjourned. Thank you.